Hello and welcome to Work at Life. We are back and we are, as always, very excited to bring you a special guest today. But just as a reminder, Work at Life is all about the gray area between work and life, and specifically how employees and organizations can work together to really bring out the passion in the workplace and the way that everybody can really be more successful. And lately, of course, we've been talking a lot about the pandemic and the effects on the workplace of this global crisis. So this season's theme is the first female recession. As we know, women have been really forced out of the workplace by the pandemic in huge, massive, sad numbers. And so we've been talking about several different topics related to that. And this week we have a very special guest. So just to introduce myself, my name is Maddie Grant. I'm a culture designer at Propel, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Sonia Lacina from Question Pro. Sonia, I'll turn it over to you and then we'll introduce our guest.
Yeah. Hey, Maddie. Great to be here with everyone again today. As Maddie said, my name is Sonia. I'm an organizational psychologist. I lead the workforce business unit at Question Pro. And more importantly, for today, we have my dear friend Jacinka on with us. Hey. And as a form of introduction, I don't have nearly enough time to say all the things that I want to say about her. But one of the things leading up to the episode today that I thought was kind of cool is that currently the three of us that are dialing in to share what we hope are going to be some really impactful insights for women and leaders are actually dialing in from three different continents. Maddie being in the US, Jacinka being in Latin America, and me currently being in Europe. And I mentioned that actually because both Jacinka and I are from former Yugoslavia, and we connected when I moved to Buenos Aires about 6 years ago and was looking to create a network there. And it was a whole new world for me. And I thought, you know, where can I find friends? Where can I find some, you know, outstanding women to learn from? How do I navigate a new culture, a new country? And Jacinka, from a friend standpoint, was just so incredibly kind to welcome me into her friendship group and make these, you know, outstanding introductions to people that have not only become my lifelong friends, but have become individuals that I've turned to for my career and advice and just admired over time. Jacinka is a life coach. She, I mentioned, we're from former Yugoslavia. I'm from Serbia. She's from Bosnia. She moved over in 99 to California, got her MBA from UC Berkeley, and really for a long time, as long as I've known her and much longer than that, has focused on life coaching. And really what that is helping individuals navigate through not only career challenges, but all the life challenges that are so intertwined in all of that. And so for us, it's just such an incredible pleasure to have Jacinka on today, because again, I've been able to chat with her over years and just exchange ideas and contemplate about how to navigate life and the different things that she's been through, the different things I've been through, and the people that we know, and how, you know, the hardships, the victories, the things to celebrate. And we wanted to share some of those, you know, private conversations that we've had today that we felt that, you know, what we went through with Maddie, hey, so many more people could benefit from these kinds of insights and these kinds of thoughts. So again, yes, like I could say a million more things about you, but you're just such a dear friend, and you've just been so incredibly impactful in my life and my career and me as a person, that it just felt like this season would not be complete without having you on and having you share some of your wisdom.
Oh, thank you so much. I am so glad you actually did contact me. I do believe in women empowering each other. I always have. And most of the friends that I have are super, super smart, above average, loving, kind, compassionate women that want to help other women. So it's the energy I want to attract, because it allows me to be who I am. So the moment I met you, I knew you have to be part of this group. I mean, literally. And we have grown
stars.
I mean, it's known that, you know, sometimes we all talk about really supporting each other, but we have built a network that does that, and I'm very, very grateful to have crossed your path. or that we have all crossed our paths. And thanks, Maddie, for having me. So I hope I can shine some light on whatever we can do to empower women, definitely, and give some tips to for all of us to create a new normal, new leadership, set a reset button after thousands of years.
Well, and what we didn't mention was Jasenka is not just a life coach, but she's a life coach to some very big brands. So you work with Amazon, is that right? And a bunch of
Amazon,
others.
Amazon, yeah. TikTok or Rakuten, Bloomingdale's, Ford, like Disney. We've done so many things. And kind of life coach, executive coach, all this starts mixing up because how I am personally, I would bring that into work. And now more than ever, we are supposed to bring this vulnerable leadership into work. So I think this is the time when we all say, exactly, like, hey, who am I? How can I authentically show up? And it's so interesting that Amazon just got their 13th principle of wanting to be the best employer on earth, just in, like, after so many years of being the best in service. But this is now their main point is the employees, is how people can be happy and balanced lives professionally and personally. So it's so exciting to be part of that change in the history of how this is all going to evolve. Yes, definitely super excited.
Yeah, we can't wait to see what you do with that. I think they have a little ways to go.
Well, we're setting a bold vision, as we said, fast forward. Like, it's a bold vision. We're going to, be part of it, and it's going to the moon, Mars, space, all of those were bold visions.
If you succeed, like, how amazing will that be? I mean, the hundreds of thousands of people who work for Amazon, right?
Right, of course. So,
anyway, so
starts with one person, yes.
Yes, and speaking of one person, our topic for today is actually about your inner critic, which I think is a really cool topic. And it means that one person is you, me, right? So Sonia, do you want to throw up, do you want to talk about, sorry, I should, I keep forgetting this is not just a live stream, it's a podcast. So do you want to talk about our data point?
Well, yeah, but I think even before that, taking a step back, and this is something when we were chatting with Jasenka, there were just so many different topics that we could pick, right? And so we had this lively discussion around where do we think is the greatest contribution? And Jasenka, you actually brought up this notion of the inner critic. And so before we jump into the data and show what we asked people, I don't know if you want to spend a couple of minutes just talking about why you felt like that was important and how that's impacted your career, how you've seen that even manifest itself with some of these amazing brands that you work with. And then we'll jump in and see what the working population in the US thinks.
You know, it's so interesting because we all are thinking about what would make me successful, and especially like, what would that mean to be able successful at work and at home? And I think for women in particular, there's points that don't allow us to be in this place because there's an inner critic we were given evolutionary. I mean, thousands of years ago, why it was developed because we had to live in a tribe. So shame is part of the inner critic, and being in that tribe, meaning if you don't behave or behave a certain way that's not accepted, you get kicked out. And if I get kicked out, then I die, because I can't survive without the tribe. And then we grew up with, our parents who definitely meant well, but sometimes that turned into the inner critic because you will get a B+, and then your mom will say, well, why couldn't you make it an A? And so you think like, well, it's never enough. I should do more. I should do better. And then we have social constraint, like, boys don't cry and girls have to behave a certain way. Don't be aggressive, smile, don't cause trouble. So I think a lot of these voices we have internalized and we think they're real. And we think this is how we're supposed to live life. And I hear that all day, every day. And unless I can name it, I can see it, then I can't really work on it. And this becomes the limiting belief that doesn't really allow us to know what success would look like. I can't even see it because I'm only pushed into this negative space.
Yeah. And so that's one of the things, and I'll jump into the data point now, but as we were talking amongst ourselves, preparing for this podcast, we went through so many different ideas of, what those inner critics could be. and what those limiting beliefs could be. And the first thing that we wanted to touch on that we actually found maybe even the most surprising was that out of the US workers that we asked, you know, a number of different limiting beliefs, like I feel like I'm not valued, or I don't fit in, or I'm not as smart as my peers, I'm not a good friend, I'm not a good parent. All of those things that we threw out and we asked, out of the following limiting beliefs, which ones do you experience the most? That 35% of people actually said they don't believe they have limiting beliefs. And so even before jumping in, what are some of the common ones? The three of us kind of like were taken aback and it's like, wait a minute, could that be right? Like we're thinking about all these limiting beliefs that are, you know, amplified and sometimes a little lower, and the combination and which one to experience the most. We're 1/3 of the population's rocking out saying like, I don't really feel like I have anything that's holding me back. So let's pause and talk about that for a second. Like, is it that people don't realize it? How does that manifest itself in organizations where you might show up and say, ah, oh, if I'm, you know, 5 minutes late because I have to do something for my kid or my parents, or is my team going to think that I'm not a good enough employee? But if I'm not 5 minutes late to, you know, change my kid's diaper or do something, am I a horrible parent? Like, when a lot of us have all of these huge things, you know, being balanced, and we see the data that says that maybe a third of people don't even believe they have anything holding them back, what can managers and organizations do, like when it comes to being empathetic to somebody and understanding what someone's going through that you maybe don't realize you experience yourself? Like, what are some of your thoughts around that, both for Jacinta and Maddie?
I think you brought up a great point. I was so stunned, and when I saw 35%, I thought, wait, like you don't know that there's something that diminishes your accomplishments, like any effort you put in, and then says like, well, not a big deal, anybody can do that. Oh, this person is doing it better. Like, yeah, this happens for all of us. How is it possible that we're not aware of this voice? But I think it's great because, as you mentioned before, we were talking like, the clients that come to me are already open to doing it. And I think there's two groups. There's one group who's unaware, which is great for us knowing like, okay, there's some work to do. And there's the second one that's aware, but still doesn't know what to do with it. And so I think that first step for us to be in this place is like, okay, let's make this a whole awareness and ask each other and not be ashamed to even say it, because everybody has it. So I think like the first step is like, let's just name it. Let's give it a name. And I call mine a gremlin, and I'm dating myself here because when I talk to my young TikTokers clients, they're like, gremlin? They're all 20, 21. Like, I don't think I watched that movie. But it's because it's this screechy little voice in my head that doesn't allow me to listen to my intuition. It's just like always in the way of expanding and thinking about how I can concentrate on contribution. How can I be of service versus constantly what I'm not doing well? So yes, awareness, like let's just make a movement of having people 35% being aware of that.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I think I think a lot about language in terms of culture specifically. And so I think you hit the nail on the head in terms of the naming of it. So everybody has an inner critic. But I think many people maybe don't actually know the term limiting belief, first of all. Right. But even if they do, they might not kind of consider that as something that affects them in the workplace specifically, you know? So being able to define what it is and name it specifically, like you just said, for yourself, you know, maybe it's your angel and your devil on your shoulders, or, you know, you're just your, you know, inside voice that gives you doubts, you know, whatever it is. There's lots of different words you can use to describe it. So taking that first step to bring up these words is a way to get it more visible. And then once it's visible, then, you know, you can start to address, well, what is it stopping you from doing, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's like, so one of the things that's been interesting pattern for me between our episodes is that awareness. And at one point when we were saying, I don't remember, oh, it was the first female recession, like when we started, the show, and we were saying, do you think women are doing better in the workplace today or worse? And more people said better. And it was like, well, wait a minute, but if you look at the data, so many women had dropped out. Like, it is actually much worse today than it was a year ago. And it was that awareness. And so I think for us who are really experts and focus on this area, every topic I feel like that we bring up makes me realize more and more that it's not necessarily common knowledge. It's not necessarily that it's something everybody thinks about, knows what it is. And I even thought, you know, the difference between maybe asking an open-ended question of saying, like, out of the following limiting beliefs, which ones do you experience? And just saying, what are your limiting beliefs? Where someone might say, like, oh, well, I don't know what that is. But then we list a bunch of things. And in some way, even if you don't know what a limiting belief is, like, we're giving you these options. And you're still saying, like, I'm not really sure. So I think it's general awareness. And then I think it's also like self-reflection and awareness of what each individual person is going through. But then looking at the people, you know, so 35% said that they don't have limiting beliefs, but 25%, for example, said, I should be further along in my career. 20% of people said, I'm not valued. 19, I don't fit in. Like, there were all these things. There were just like these like big, not even like one specific critic, but it's like these great things that I should be farther. I'm not doing enough. I'm not good enough. But then it's also interesting too, because a lot of these were work related. Like, I'm not developing new skills. I'm not as smart. But then even items like, I'm not a good friend, got an 11%. I don't have as big of a network. I'm not as good of a parent as I like to be, got 10%. So it is definitely a mix where we're seeing that inner critic a lot of times does relate to a person's career, but it doesn't stop there. And so when you think about even what we talk about in our show, like work and all of those things outside of work, as we're starting to blend things, how much, like I was giving, you know, an example of a child, and I think it's because it's so true to me. And I was mentioning that recently, that when I'm in meetings, when I'm doing different things, I'm still a mom. And having worked from everywhere and working from home currently, is you're always making trade-offs with your kid and you have your work hours, but when your kid really needs you and you hear that, but you're saying, I'm in a meeting, does that give you even more of a word, like parental critic? So it will be really interesting, I think, in my opinion, as we blend our lives more and more, how much do those critics like start to pop up in different places? And is it going to actually augment them? And that's why I think in so many ways, it's so important for us to talk about how do we more effectively control them? How do we more effectively, like as individuals, what do we do from awareness, acknowledgement, and then like, is it silencing it? Is it really dealing with it? To what can organizations do to know that, you know, if a person is sitting there saying, I feel like I should be further along in my career, which was the top limiting belief, is a transparency that maybe like, hey, like, no, you are doing really well and you are in a place where you should be. Or is it really understanding that and providing people with different opportunities and moving them along? So I just wanted to pause there. I think, I mean, we could use hours to discuss all of this, but I think that there's just so much to to peel back. Just wanted to pause a little bit on the balance and the ones that came up most, and then we'll look at our next data point for a few minutes.
I don't think that the self-doubt is healthy or not healthy. It just is. And it's here to stay for all of us. And it's not like getting rid of the inner critic, because it does evolutionarily help us be more alert and, you know, be in this space. All our feelings, like the fear, is meant to protect us from danger. We want to have it. Sadness is there for us to explore and, you know, think about things. So I don't think certain feelings need to go away, but the inner critic usually is this little child that needs to be taken care of, that's afraid. And that's why it's speaking up. And sometimes I feel like it's the little child that got out of the child seat, and now it's like crying and it's touching your, you know, steering wheel and your radio, and you're trying to drive and do all this, and that becomes so much that you forget where you're going. So mainly it's this vision and saying like, well, I need to protect my child. What he wants is like to give it a hug, put it back in the back seat, and give it its almond milk to drink. And you know, I just have to like put that in, slide that in. But I mean, it's more like, let's not put it aside. And that's not, because when you judge inner critic, then it's like expands more, the inner critic of inner critic. It's basically give it space. It's there. I love you. I care about you. Like, because if your niece or your child came back and said, I'm afraid, you wouldn't kick it in the gut. You wouldn't say like, well, you know, just deal with it. Don't be afraid. Move forward. Yeah, you should be afraid. We don't say that. So we want to think about it the same way and kind of, okay, I'm going to nurture you. And I want to be realistic. That's the main point. How do I become realistic about what's truly happening? I should be further, you know, in my career. What does that even mean? Like, what does should mean? It the word in itself means nothing. If you should, then let's talk about things you're contributing that you can expand on, contribute more, be of service. That becomes then an I'm doing versus maybe not. Like, it's a crutch for our brain of wanting to be in this self-sabotaging space. So yeah, it's like distinguish between the two, hug it, give it place, be compassionate, question it compassionately. What are you afraid of?
Yeah.
What does that mean? So let's be really truthful where you are. Let's be grateful and list the accomplishments and concentrate on that.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point because to me, like at least the things that I've experienced personally is when something like that starts to come up, it's giving it that attention, like you were saying, and understanding the why behind it. Because what I've realized over my life is if I don't, it keeps eating away from me and it's not productive because I feel guilty, right? Oh, I should do this and I should, but then I need what I found, or at least try to do sometimes more effectively than others because we're all human, is why am I feeling that way? If I do believe that it's important for me to move something, I need to do something about it. Because either I need to make peace, like, oh, I should be farther in my career. Why? Where am I today? Am I happy? What defines my happiness? Okay. Oh, I should be happy. Like where I am today, I shouldn't be farther. Or if I say, okay, I feel like I'm not a good enough parent. Why? What else should I be doing? Okay. Maybe I need to try healthier foods for my kid, that almond milk or, you know, something else. And to say, okay, I'm going to try these specific things, but it's taking that moment, either making understanding that it's not silly, but that you're at a point that you shouldn't, I keep saying shouldn't, I hate that word, but you shouldn't be hard on yourself and making it.
Let's not shit on us, on ourselves. No more shitting on ourselves.
So it's a, you know, do I just like let it go and realize that I'm in a good place, or do I realize that this inner critic is there because it's important to do something about one aspect of my life and then think about what to do? But it's almost like those points of awareness, like it's like a little fever, a little touch to nudge you, have you level think and decide on a either no, this is good and I'm actually happy, I don't want to beat myself up over about it, or maybe this is a part of my life where I could make some changes and now let me take action and see what those changes are. And I think in the dynamic of organizations, of managers and people, those conversations could be really healthy to help, because I think we all go and we all develop and iterate and realize how to deal with certain things at different times. So if we, for example, from an organizational standpoint, see that, you know, work-life balance is a challenge for people, or that people feel stagnant in their careers and they're not developing the skills from the culture standpoint, what could organizations do to either provide more or provide more transparency to people to where others are, to say, you are actually in a really great place, stop being so hard on yourself, or, hey, we're realizing that the skills externally are evolving, you all are not maybe as happy, you know, where you are, so we are going to provide more. So I think, like what you were saying, those conversations, like for you and your role as a life coach, as an executive coach, you do that one-on-one. I think anywhere from friendships to leadership positions to organizational positions, I think there's such amazing opportunities for us to continue to have better conversations around that. And again, either realizing that the current state is actually much better than what we think, or realizing, well, maybe it's not so great. So what do we do about it? To stop making that a critic and actually make it actionable for that survival. Maddie, you keep, I think, wanting to jump in and say something. So I'm going to give you the mic.
No, I'm listening to everything you guys are talking about. It's so interesting to me because I had this thought that popped into my head that from a I'm not a good parent perspective, like I know a lot of people have had that thought, right? But it's not just when you have little kids. So I just took my son to Berkeley in Boston, where he's going to go to college. So he's 18.
Go Bears.
And I was sitting in the welcome, you know, presentation to the incoming students in the auditorium, like on my email, because I took 3 days off to go do this Boston trip. And it's like a weird perception thing, right? Because part of me is saying I should be paying attention to this really boring like welcome presentation because I'm sitting here with my kid. And then part of me is thinking, well, isn't it great that I can just sit on my phone and actually answer some emails and not let anything drop? But the situation is the same. I'm sitting, you know, in Boston, which is not where my office is, you know, able to do work and do, you know, other things and spend time with my son at the same time. So when it's, I guess what I'm thinking is if it's all perception, then from the organizational perspective, maybe we have a responsibility to help balance the perceptions, right? Mm. To say it's okay to spend time with your kid. It's also okay to, you know, check in by email, and it's okay to not check in by email if you need to take that time off. And that's a whole different topic in terms of, you know, like logging off. But the balanced part of it is what I was really thinking about, and being able to have a role to play in balancing those perceptions. Knowing that everybody on your team has, you know, these inner critics at different times saying different things.
And you're so and that's right, the thing too, like you're saying, they're going to be different.
Well, you know, a lot of what I'm hearing right now from people is like this limiting belief of I have to respond immediately. So talking about my inner voice, if I don't respond, then what happens? If I don't respond to a black message and 13, you know, seconds, then what would people think? And I need to be kind and I need to be helpful. And if I don't do it, and I think this is like what inner voice wins, and everybody's thinking the same thing, and we're not making any changes because the inner critic is running and nobody wants to be that person that stops the immediate response. And kind of that's meant as a team building or supportive, but it's not. Let's call it what it is. It's just distractions. And you see, Irvine just did the study about every time we get distracted by a message, it takes our brain to come back 23 minutes and 15 seconds. So checking a message on Twitter is not 30 seconds. It's 23 minutes and 45 seconds. Three of those and an hour's gone. I mean, so we have to now start being really realistic about where do we give people space so the inner voice doesn't start screaming and yelling about doing things that are not even what needs to be happening at work. So this is the place where from leadership, we start creating a different culture. So the boss is saying, you know what, I'm not going to be sending emails after 6 o'clock. I'm not, you know, going to slack you at 10 at night saying like, well, you don't have to answer right now. Answer in the morning. Who can do that? Nobody. Like, well, you know, this is where I am. My husband is sitting, we're watching a movie.
Do that?
And I'm like secretly trying to, you know, answer a Slack message.
Yeah.
It interferes everywhere in our life.
Yeah. And it's so much like now when we're thinking about how do we change work? How do we change relationships? How do we constantly iterate on that? Like, it's so much about checking in. It's so much about trying different things and seeing. And the thing is, like, different things will work for different people too. So then you have certain standards that you're going to put in place. And then you have certain like conversations that you need to have with different team members because of their approach. And so it's like, it's really interesting because I think there's some like guidelines and rules and then like the endless exceptions in some ways, because we're all different humans and balancing all of that. But I think to me, a lot of times one, you know, that's a recurring theme for our time today is awareness. And two is just trying different things and realizing, you know, some things will work, some things will need to be better and improved. Some things will, you know, maybe we'll try and they'll horribly fail, but at least we, if we do it with the right intentions, it's more important than to try than keep the status quo. So it's, I think it's a fascinating time to connect and know like what kind of like communicating effectively, what kind of support do people need, and then continue to learn and change. Because the thing is, like, once we figure out something that works in the moment, the world around us will change and will change. And we're like, oh, nope, start again. So it's definitely like an evolving and iterative process for sure.
So we won't be shitting on ourselves any longer.
No, we shouldn't be. And I know, oh my goodness, like we have like we're already 30 minutes into our time, so we'll just touch on our second data point super fast before we wrap up because we thought this one was really interesting too. So we also asked workers around the US, what's the hardest part of bringing your whole self to work? And one thing that was interesting is that a quarter of people said speaking up. And then another 23% said asking for help. And then equally 20% between two options were connecting with others in a genuine way and having the courage to take risks. And then fortunately, the lowest one out of these 12% said being vulnerable. And so I think that's good because hopefully all the press that vulnerability is getting is actually starting to work. So just wanted to spend a few, just a couple minutes on this and seeing, because I think the one that we were all talking about before asking this question and talking about and actually seeing what the data says was about speaking up. And this went out to workers around the US, both men and women, but we talked about particularly for women in the workplace. So just wanted to take a pause and get your opinions on what this data shook out to look like.
I think like this first part when we're not aware, and then the second part then when we are aware that 50% of our work, but all of them, once you're aware of the inner critic, then you realize like the more self-aware I am, the more so I start loving myself, the more I love myself, the more authentic I am. The more authentic I am, the more risk I can take and acceptance and following my intuition and speak up. And then inner voice doesn't tell me like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. What if everybody laughs?
Yeah.
Like, and we as women want to be likable. So there's a huge emotional risk of sounding arrogant or not nice by raising an issue or saying something. So that wins over truly being authentic and accepting and loving and saying, I have something to say because you have said things before. Obviously, that's why you're in that position. And asking for help is all about vulnerability, right? And making friends and connecting, it's all about vulnerability. That's how we do it. And is this kind of new leadership of saying, I can be open and saying, like, I have no clue what to do. Please help me. And
No.
so it's the louder the inner voice, all of these obviously go up. So this is the place, give it a name, allow your inner nurturer to kind of have a voice as well. Like hug this little kid and then ask your inner nurturer to guide you through into this direction. And then defy the inner critic. Like this is how you practice. When you feel like don't speak up, speak up. Because how many times did women say like, oh, I don't know if I should say that, while you fighting inside your head with the inner critic, a guy's already spoken up and you're like, darn it, that's exactly what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
it's like, oh,
Yeah.
the
Or
train
that's
just
exactly
stopped.
not what I wanted to say, but now it's like 10 times more difficult to go and combat. If I was the first one, it would be easier to say.
Right.
I've had those
So
too.
the Well, I mean, how do we play big? And it's like that's taking a risk. So, okay, we'll be ridiculed. They're gonna say yes or no. And this is the also part where we can support women amongst each other. And so if you Sanya speaks and the man interrupts or mansplains, you say, like, oh, Jeff, hold on. I really want to hear what Sanya has to say. So this is like also we're supporting each other, but everybody's so in their inner voice that I forget to contribute. And I keep saying if I grab that doorknob, I go into an office, and my intention is to be of service and to contribute. Like that overrides the inner voice. Then all I'm thinking about, how can I contribute? How can I be of service? What can I say to make this better and expand more?
I love it. I think that's actually a perfect note to end on. And just to bring it back to the first female recession, of course, these are all lessons and advice we should really take to heart in terms of, bringing women back into the workplace, into the workforce, because I'm sure that lots of women sitting at home are thinking, how can I jump back in? I've been out too long, or I still have all these other concerns and things I have to deal with. Like I'm never going to be able to handle it, whatever it is, So there's clearly going to be just so much of that going on. And I think, all of your advice is just super helpful. And hopefully, if just a few people, listen to this podcast and think, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to get that job. And it'll be good. It'll work out.
Yeah. It's no when the inner critic starts pounding away, the inner nurturer is a refuge. It's an ally. Like, what would I do? Like, if this is your person, just take them into the meeting with you. Definitely. I mean, everybody who's in their position is because they've done something right. You just can't be like being there on a fluke. Just start seeing like who you truly are and recognize yourself.
Yes. Awesome. Oh, yeah, Cynka, thank you so much. Like, I can't, like, I wish we could just keep talking.
It's so much
the time
fun.
Went by so fast.
I know.
It is. I feel very lucky that I get to have coffees and chats with you. So we'll continue this otherwise. But like sure. Maddie was saying, I hope that everybody that listens in has an opportunity to really take a step back, reflect, nurture themselves, push themselves in the right direction. And there are just so many incredible people out there doing really, really notable things. And unfortunately, a lot of times it is women that are more critical on themselves, have more of these like inner gremlins and indifferent doubts. So I hope that many people find this as phenomenal as I did and as insightful as I did, and give it that it nurtures their soul into really
no shooting,
looking at themselves
no
and the world differently. No shooting.
And nurture, like inner nurture. Like we know what to say.
Awesome. All right.
Thank you, ladies, so much. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you.